Welcome to The Jones Zone, a podcast by Daryl and JJ Jones, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. Your host, Daryl Jones, a top Orange County real estate agent, has been supporting homeowners for over 30 years. He is here to share his tips and advice, as well as insights from industry experts, to help you take your real estate game to the next level. Now, here's your host, Daryl Jones.
Hi, everybody. This is Daryl Jones with The Jones Zone. This is part two of Tax Talk, the benefits of owning a home. Thank you for joining us as we discuss some of the legislation around home ownership and real estate taxes and touch on home office deductions for those of you who work remotely or run a business from home. Pat is going to expertly guide us through these very important pieces of home ownership tax knowledge. So tell me a little bit about, explain the implications of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act on home ownership and real estate taxes.
Right. So that fancy long word that you said, we call it in short TCJA. So that was a part of the 2018 massive tax reform. And that was the law that placed a limitation of $750,000 the mortgage loan on the first and the second home. And in terms of property tax, so that's where it really stings for us in California. There is a limitation of $10,000 on the deduction of state and local income tax. So state and local income tax, SALT, we call that. Not the table salt. But
you accountants have a lot of acronyms, huh?
You're right. Yeah. That's our second job. So in that law, our state and local income tax got limited to $10,000. So that includes taxes we pay via like our payroll withholding we pay to California or whichever state that you live in, and property tax. So you add those two together, it is capped at $10,000, which is nothing. Yeah. If you factor in, you said the average home price here is about easily $1 million.
Well, I would say for a house, anywhere from 800 to $1 million. It's slipped a little bit, but you can get yourself a decent home. So yeah.
Yeah. And the property tax is what, like 1%?
Well, yeah, it's really easy to figure that out in terms of what I tell people. And this is being conservative. And what I mean by that is it's an overestimate. Is if you're buying something for $900,000, your property taxes are right around $900 a month.
Okay, so for a whole year, they're easily at 10 grand.
Yeah.
And so there you go.
Oh,
they've
goodness.
Capped it out on it. And now they're going to miss out on deducting their California or the state income tax. Before 2018, prior to TCJA, we could deduct unlimited. So there are actually, you know, the uber rich that has a primary and perhaps 10 vacation homes throughout the country, and they could deduct all of those property tax.
Oh, it's per property is what you just said.
No, it's total. Before, it was unlimited. So if I have like, say...
Oh, they can no longer deduct those property taxes?
Oh, you can choose whatever, but you're just capped at 10 grand.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
that's what, it's not much anymore. You know, 10 grand, just the one property that you've mentioned is easily around 10 grand. So now I'm going to miss out deducting on the state income tax that I pay through my pay stubs, quarterly tax payments. Those I cannot deduct.
Wow. So basically the answer is call Pat.
There is a workaround. There is many states have a workaround on this SALT limitation of 10 grand.
Oh, well, tell us about that.
That's going to be a different podcast. That's
a lot
more
is it?
Complicated.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So, hey, a lot of, you know, with the recent pandemic and COVID and everything, a lot of people working remotely, and that's caught on like never before. How do homeowners who work remotely or run a business from home qualify for home office deductions?
That's a great question. So we're going to split that up into two answers. So if I am a W-2 employee and now I can work from home, technically, yes, I can write off my home office expense, except now that particular deduction got eliminated by the 2018 TCJA on the federal side. However, I can still take that deduction on the California side or the state side.
Wow.
If I own my own business, like for me, I do, and we all of us work from home, we are 100% virtual firm, then we go back to the home office deduction, where if I have a room in the house that is 100% use for business, then I can write off that as home office. But you know, in Southern California or especially in Orange County in LA, space is limited. So if I've set up perhaps just a desk in the living room or a desk, you know, on the side of the kitchen, that will not count, unfortunately, because that particular space is not 100% dedicated to home office use.
All right. So very similar to the what we talked about previously in terms of...
Correct.
Yeah. And you have to... So you really want to dedicate a room...
Right.
...to, if you are working remotely, you want to dedicate a room only to work, and therefore right. your tax benefits right. will increase dramatically.
And in an audit, I kid you not, they want pictures of that.
You know, it's funny, I take pictures myself, but okay, this podcast is not about me and me taking pictures. But that's what I was going to ask you too. I mean, how many times do... Well, I guess you wouldn't know how many times the IRS calls people out on this, but so if you were to get called out on it, and I'm sure each case may be a little bit individualized, but pictures of the home office will help dramatically if right. you are audited.
On that note, many, many, many years ago, I did have a new client who came over because she got audited and the auditor was honing in on the home office. So when I look at the tax return, they were erroneously claiming the home office as almost one third of the whole house. So that's huge. Okay. yeah. That's huge. And the funny thing is she's a realtor. She goes, it is a very, very, very big room. I go, yes, yes, please, please entertain me and go get it, you know, measuring tape and measure out the room. And the size of the whole house, you know, it's county record. There's no dispute about that. The only dispute is the size of that room that was used as a home office. And sure enough, it was no more than 10%.
Mm. So you got to be real careful. If you're doing yes. this, do it the right way and you don't have to worry about an audit.
Yes, yes.
All right.
The way that she got audited was because it was too high of a percentage. That's what caught the red flag.
Oh yeah, 30%.
Oh, just, yeah.
No, that makes... Well, tell me this. So in these write-offs, what documentation do homeowners need to claim deductions on their taxes and how should they keep track of their expenses? What would you recommend?
So for homeowners, it's fairly easy. On their annual, you know, when they pay the mortgage, they will get at the end of the year or the beginning of the following year, around this time, they should get what's called a Form 1098-1098 from the lender. And on there, it will show the interest that they've paid on that loan throughout the year. So we will use those numbers. One thing to watch out, in the last few years, there's been a lot of what I call serial refinancers. Because, you know, the rate kept dropping and yeah. people just kept refinancing. So every time they refinance, it's a new lender. And they're going to get, if let's say somebody refis five times throughout the year, they're going to get 5-1098. So don't forget to factor in every single change in the lender. And we've seen where they forget and they would miss out on the deduction. Say if they have five different lenders, we now only have three forms 1098. We're missing two of them. And if the homeowner doesn't catch on to that, we're missing out on deductions.
So you don't have to necessarily keep track of if regarding that specific mortgage write-off. The bank does.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And then in terms of the tracking of their, perhaps improvements that they've done for their home, mm-hmm. they should just scan it and save it in their computer. Don't keep the physical receipt because ultimately at one point, those receipts will fade and you'll just get a piece of white paper a few years down the road. So I always tell people to scan it, save it in your computer, and it would be permanently captured. And if there's an audit, the IRS has indicated they will allow scanned PDF copies. They don't demand original receipts anymore.
Huh. That's mighty nice of them.
Yeah.
So scanning them, having a file, and then handing them over to your...
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's really important. People forget it because throughout, you think about like right now, a lot of folks have locked in into very, very historic low interest rate, right?
Oh, so, the refi market has dried up.
Right.
I have so many lenders that absolutely, because that was an enormous part of their business.
But that tells me these people are going to stay in their home for a very, very long time. And if they're going to do improvements, they better save those receipts because come 10, 20 years down the line, they sell the property, and then the question comes, what can I deduct? What can I deduct? My question to them is, what improvements have you done? Oh, yes, like 15 years ago, I did XYZ. That cost me $100,000. Oh, okay. So let's see those receipts.
So XYZ. XYZ can be, tell us some maybe some common improvements that you can't write off And then common. So for example, I know this answer changes depending on how the residence or the property is used, whether it's a rental or a primary residence or a vacation home. Because I get people, for example, saying, hey, I put a new roof on there so we can write that off. Can you touch on that? Because is a roof, for example, is that something that you
Yeah, a roof, if it's their primary residence, again, they don't write it off right now, but they can add to the overall cost of the home. So in the future years, when they sell it, it will reduce their gain or the profits in layman terms. For a rental property, then that new roof gets spread over the life of the asset. So again, like you said, it depends on the usage of the home and how we will treat that expense.
How about solar? Solar's a pretty hot subject right now.
You're leading down to another great topic. Yes, solar is a hot topic. If it is your primary residence, there is a tax credit. So let's say it's 30%. So let's say you spend 10 grand on the solar panels and 30%, that's, you know.
$3,000.
Yeah. And so
don't make me be better at math than you. I'm just kidding.
Thank you. I need a calculator to add 1 + 1. And so your net cost is really 7. Okay. So for rental properties, they can still get a benefit, but it's under a different code section in the IRS Internal Revenue Code, that is. So they still could get the benefit for solar panels. It is coming back as a hot topic for a lot of folks, whether it be a residence or a rental.
And it's the same type of write-off for either.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. So on that note of refinancing, are there any tax implications of refinancing a mortgage, or how does it affect the deductibility of interest when you refinance?
So here's not on the interest, but here's one thing interesting to note. When you, let's say, compare that when you buy a home, you know, at the front end, at the get-go, mm-hmm. and you pay points, right, on the loan, that point can be immediately deducted in the year that you buy that home. So the initial purchase.
Whether it's a rental or a primary residence.
Yeah, well, let's stick with primary okay. right now. If I were to refinance, like my primary, you know, now that the rates in the last few years have dropped, and I, again, pay points, that point cannot be written off completely in the year I refi. It has to be amortized over the life of the loan. So whether it be a 15-year loan, 30-year loan, and I pay, let's say, $5,000 of points, then that gets spread over the life. And let's say the following year I refi again, then whatever I didn't write off on the initial points when I did the first refi, now I get to write off and I start another brand new amortization with the second loan refi points.
Wow. So basically, in a nutshell, if you own some houses and especially rental properties, you need a tax advisor.
Yes, there's a lot that people miss. And I've seen people forget, especially because of all the refinancing right now.
Yeah.
We do a pretty thorough job. We follow the cash, you know, see money in, money out, and you can easily trace that somebody perhaps might have missed a 1098, whereas you know, those who are not familiar with real estate might just data dump and not pay much attention to it. And you could miss thousands of dollars of deductions.
Wow. I have a friend of mine that actually had a pretty good hypothesis about the market and the low rates. And you had mentioned it when people are refinancing, they're in a 2.5% yeah. interest rate. He said, you know, guessing on what will happen, and you kind of touched on it, is that person's probably going to stay in that house.
Yeah.
It's far more likely to stay in that house because not only the move up is not twice as much, it's four times as much.
Correct. They're locked in for a very long time. And that's why I'm thinking that home improvements is going to start coming back because these people are going to be staying there for a very long time and they might as well fix it up to their preference.
Yeah, which ironically is going to not necessarily be good for the market because when you're talking about, well, depending on what you define good as, good for sellers, I suppose, but not so much for buyers because there's just going to cause fewer homes to be on the market, simple supply and demand.
Right. That's a problem that you have to deal with.
Well, yeah, they're building, as you can see, and we're going to do an episode on this, but they're building the new format is the, in fact, for example, I read somewhere where I think it's Costco is putting together stores with living spaces above it. And not to mention the fact that they're building, even around here, they have places where everything's walkable. You can walk there within right. 10, 15 minutes. That's something that is definitely going to cause a lot more available housing, I suppose you can say. Let me ask you this, because of course the massive increase of real estate prices in the last 5 years, or really we've seen an increase. I mean, in hindsight, the bottom of the market was end of 2011 here in Orange County. And we've seen nothing but the prices go up. Now there's a fluctuation. You see a little, it's not a straight line up. But with that said, the property taxes increase too. How do homeowners deal with a property tax assessment that they believe is too high? Because we've seen a recent drop in values last year when the interest rates went up so dramatically. How do homeowners deal with the property tax assessment? They think it's too high.
Okay, so let's start off when they first buy the home. Chances are they bought it from the seller who's had a very, very low basis, right? Because they bought it for a long time ago. And so the county probably has a very low amount in terms of property value basis. So the, when the buyer first go in, there's going to be probably a year of delay before the county catches on that, hey, you know, the seller had bought it for, let's say, $300,000 and you bought it for $1 million. So we need to make that adjustment to reflect your million. And they might see a year of delay. And then perhaps a year or two later, now you're saying that home prices have gone down. And it depends on how far down their house adjustment, they could file an appeal to show that the fair market value is not what it is reflected in the county statement. So keep in mind, in California, the county can make a 3% adjustment every year, maximum 3%. No other states do that. Other states reflect the basis on fair market value. California is the only state in which the county can only increase up to 3%.
That's Prop 13, right? Back in the late 70s.
Right.
Jarvis.
So if, let's say, with the 3% in my value, it's really much lower than that, like flashback to 2010, 2011 timeframe when property's value just took a free fall.
Probably half of what
right.
they are now.
Yeah. Then the homeowner can file an appeal application with the county. Now, that's going to take, you know, it's not an immediate impact. It's going to take several months. And that's not too commonly seen, at least for the last 10 years since the run-up in prices.
I've run comps for people and given them to provide to the county for that.
Right.
And now the market's kind of rebounding and it's
right.
heading so, north again.
Exactly. So it's like this roller coaster swing. And then you put the application in and let's say 6 months, 8 months, a year later, the county gets the application, they're reviewing it, then they take another look at the fair value and it's back to where,
yeah. you know. So you're chasing your tail almost.
Exactly.
Well, can you discuss the tax implications of selling a primary residence? How long must the homeowner live in the home before it qualifies for tax-free capital gains? You may have touched on this. I think it's
right.
2 years.
It is 2 years out of the last 5 years. And so let's play that out. It is always looked at from the date of sale. You look backward and you have to have owned the house and live in there for at least 2 years. There are exceptions.
Two out of the last 5 years.
Sorry, yeah, 2 out of the last 5 years. There are exceptions. You know, you got to love the tax code. There's the rule and then there's exception to the rule and sometimes there's exception to the exception.
Oh, wow.
There are certain exceptions, like let's say if there are the key word is unforeseen circumstances. Perhaps let's say the homeowner lost a job, right? Now we got some massive layoffs coming up.
So they moved in, they've only for a year, so they wouldn't typically qualify for this 2 year requirement.
Right. And now they lost a job.
Lost a job, or they have a medical issue.
A medical issue, or they got deployed for military. So certain special circumstances, they could perhaps not be forced to fulfill the 2 years. And so in that case, it could be a prorated exclusion, not the full 250, but prorated. Because again, it's up to $250,000 per headcount.
That was a gem. I never had known that.
Right.
I would say most people don't know that.
Yeah. And then there's also, you know, we can get this benefit every 2 years. So say, you know, if I bought something back in 2011 and 2 years later ran up in price, I sell it. I get up to $250,000 tax-free gain. I buy another place. I wait 2 years. I live there. I own it. I wait 2 years. I sell it. I can do this every 2 years.
Right. And frankly, if you're only looking at money and taxes, that's what you would do.
Right.
Obviously, there's a lot more involved
right.
in moving that,
right.
that you don't
now,
want.
Now, a little bit also to it is, you know, I said 2 out of the last 5 years, right? So say now I bought my home, I lived in it for 2 years. I want a bigger home. I'm going to rent out my you know, the market conditions perhaps is not right for selling right now, and I'm going to rent out my home. I can rent it out for 3 years, and then come 5 years, I sell it before the 5 years is over. So at that point, I look back, even though I did rent it out for 2-3 years, I got to answer, did I live in there and own it for at least 2 years, 24 months, 2 years? And the answer is yes, even though I did rent it in the last 3 years, I still-
Or even the last 2.5. I mean, you don't necessarily go through it.
Yeah, don't push it to the edge. But if I am able to close escrow and fulfill that requirement, I can still benefit from up to $250,000 tax-free gain, even though I've rented it. So that's another strategy that people can use. Let me throw another curveball to that. So let's say I did buy my house 2010, 2011 at the bottom of the market, right? And I lived there for many years. Then I decide to rent it out for 3 years and I want to sell it. But the gain is going to be way more than the $250,000 tax-free gain per headcount for, say, Jack and Jill.
Right.
And because Jack and Jill has also rented this house out for, let's say, 2 years before they sell, they can do a hybrid of two co-sections, 121, which is a home gain exclusion of up to $250,000 per headcount, plus the 1031 like-kind exchange.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Do you have a choice to do?
So no, you can do both.
Wow. Yeah, I had some clients that did that. It was when the market crashed, you know, back in 2008, 9, 10, and they decided to rent it out for a year or two and then write it off as a loss because it was worth less than what they bought it for. Because let's say they bought it in 2006 and in 2010, it was worth a lot. Or 2009 even, it was probably worth a little less. And anyway, that's
probably... That's a lot loss, but if I have a profit, like you said, like say if I've owned the property, let's say I bought it in the downturn or I've owned it for a very long time, then I'm selling it. I do fulfill the 2 out of the last 5 years rule. Plus I've also rented out for 2 years. In that case, I qualify for 2 tax code benefits. So I can get my home gain exclusion, 250, and then the balance, the excess gain, it's more than 250. I now can do a 1031 and buy a replacement rental property and walk away with no tax.
Wow. Are there any tax deductions available for homeowners who are paying off home equity loan or line of credit?
There is actually no benefit because the benefit is in terms of tax perspective is writing off the interest on any loan, on the mortgage loan, whether it be the first loan or a second loan, like a home equity or line of credit. People often think that if I'm going to pay off, let's say, this $100,000 of home equity loan, I get to write off $100,000. You don't get to write off the principal of a loan. Because conversely, when you got the loan of $100,000, that was never considered income. Right.
So you didn't pay taxes on it.
They didn't pay taxes on it. So when you repay this loan, then it is not a deduction. Now, conversely, if you decide not to repay this loan and walk away, then what we got is cancellation of debt income. And that was the situation in the 08 crash where a lot of folks walked away from the loan and then the lender said, okay, well, we're going to hand you a 1099 form.
I want to delve into that real quickly. Theoretically, that would be meaning if let's say you had to do what's called a short sale, those were common back then, and you were forgiven a debt of $200,000, then the bank can issue a 1099 on that as if you made $200,000.
Exactly.
So you actually have a taxable event to where not only could you pay back that $200,000, now the IRS is coming after you for, let's say, $60,000. Because you owe taxes on that debt forgiveness.
Correct.
But I know they were waiving that back then.
At that time, there was the Mortgage Relief Act. But what people fail to consider is that they also walked away from their rental property. And that Mortgage Relief Act did not cover rental property. It only covers your primary residence.
Interesting.
Yes. And so there were a lot of folks who kept saying, you know, you got the 1099, you can ignore it. Well, you know, you never ignore any 1099, 1098 form. You got to include that and then indicate whether it's you meet any certain exception or not. But to ignore that, that's foolish.
I think a basic rule is anything that has the IRS on the envelope, you don't ignore.
That's a good rule.
Yeah. Well, I really, really appreciate you coming in today, Pat. This has been so so educational for me and hopefully for everyone out there. So I know owning a house provides numerous benefits, including the tax benefits we discussed here today. And if you're looking to buy, be sure to speak to a real estate agent or a tax professional to better understand the tax implications of homeownership. We just kind of touched on some things to make it dangerous. Additionally, keep accurate records. Your expenses, as you can tell, will help tremendously. Consult with a tax professional when claiming deductions. So I'm always here for your questions. And now you know Pat. And thanks so much, Pat, for sharing your knowledge on this important topic. It's been a pleasure having you on our show today. How can listeners find you, Pat, if they did want to talk to you more about potential tax savings or anything like that?
Thank you for having me today, Daryl. It's been a very fun experience. So folks can find me on my website at leungtax.com. L-E-U-N like Nancy, G like Greg, tax.com. Or they can call our office at 949-430-0338.
Wow. Well, it's wonderful. And like I said, Pat's my tax advisor. And I tell you, she's just blown me away with a lot of her great ideas on saving a lot in taxes, all legally too, which yes, of course is important. So
I'm not ready to retire, so I'm not about to do anything illegal.
Yeah, no, not at all. Well, thank you, everyone. I appreciate you tuning in and stay tuned for next week's show. We'd really like you to hear it. We're going to have a lot more great topics coming up. So take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning into the Jones Zone, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. If you found this information and insights shared in today's episode valuable, be sure to head over to iTunes to rate the show, leave a review, and subscribe so that you don't miss another episode. Remember, when it comes to real estate, knowledge is power. Stay informed and stay ahead of the game with us. I'll be back next week with even more expert advice and industry insights. Don't miss it. Thank you.